This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
So we're now on the official beginning of day two, and we had a great show last night, and I'm going to talk with somebody a little bit later about some of the acts that were there, and we'll get into that because they did some close-up. It was really good, but I'm talking right now with somebody who just got in, actually late last night, and he's going to be one of the lecturers and performers, and you know him as Dan Sperry because that's his name. Hey, Dan.
Oh, boy. Yep. Hello.
And so you got here late because you were working on Masters of Illusion.
Yeah. I think this is the 11th season coming up, and listener exclusive. I didn't tell anybody this. They didn't know this. There's an Easter egg that reoccurs in every segment. I filmed four segments, mm-hmm. and the same thing happens in every segment, but it's not like apparent. You know what I mean? I hit
it's
something.
Not where you come out and say, magic.
No, I do, I do that. I do that a couple of times. But this is something that's maybe not obvious. You got to look for it. That repeats since, yeah. I don't want to give too much away, but so you got to tune in. You got to tune in to every episode of Masters of Illusion when they start releasing the next season, whenever that is, 6 months or whatever from now. And so you got to watch every episode to see if I'm in it, and then you got to watch it to see if you can put together the pattern of what I'm doing. Even though the routines are different.
You know. Because, as some of you may know, they record a lot of segments with one person at one time, and then they spread it out over the season. And so this way you get a little bit of this guy in this episode, and then 2 weeks later you get a little bit more of that guy.
That's right. So. It's like a buffet. It's the Golden Corral. The Golden Corral of magic series.
And I know you've been doing this a number of years, and when I was talking with Gay last year when I was out there for the filming and doing a little consulting, that she was saying, I absolutely love Dan Sperry. He's one of my favorites. So I know she thinks
cool.
a lot of you.
Yeah, I've known Gay for a long time. And like going back to when I was a young teenager and like Abbott's, I remember one time I had to give Gay, I don't know if she probably remembers, I had to give Gay a ride to the airport in Kalamazoo, and I'm like white knuckling it because like I got some piece of shit. Car, you know, and I'm giving Gay Blackstone a ride. And then, you know, the Kalamazoo airport's the size of like a one car garage, and I gotta, you know, we're sitting there, nobody's there, you know, so I'm like, I'm gonna get something to drink. So I just asked, like, you know, Gay, you want something? I'm going to this shop, and like, you know, I feel like, do I ask? I'm like 20. Like, I'm asking, like, should I be asking Gay Blackstone? You know, royalty. I'm like, royalty. But yeah, so I've known Gay for a long time, and I appreciate everything she's done. As I think a lot of people should, regardless of your opinion of it, the opportunity she's given magic, as well as, especially this season in particular, well, I don't know, I wasn't on every day, I just was there one day, but some of the younger talent coming up that I've known of, but getting to see some of them have opportunities as well is great, you know, because some of the same people on every season, my God, your listeners know, we've had enough of them. So we need some of these new younger
I know
dudes.
She's always looking for new young acts all
that's
the time.
That's right, yeah.
And so if you are one, please contact her.
That's right, yeah. There's some new ones that were there filming that I think are going to be nice and refreshing surprises to the viewers.
Well, that's going to be great. You said this is season 11, I think, that is coming. Is that right?
Something like that, you know, season whatever.
Yeah,
a
they've
lot.
Been doing it for a long time, and I agree. She just recently was the guest of honor at the Magic Texas, and rightfully so, because she's from Fort Worth originally, so she's a Texas girl and hadn't really been given an honor in her own home country, you know, basically. And so this was a really nice way of doing it because it was a combined convention with the SAM and FISM, so we had like 600 or 700 people who were there. It depends who you talk to as to what the numbers are, actually. But the point is, it was a large convention. She finally got her due by being the guest of honor. And there was a tribute that a lot of guys and gals had given to her of saying, you know, you meant so much to us and also to the magic community. And you're absolutely right, Dan, as far as what she has given. She really is an inspiration, I think, you know, to the community.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well deserved, for sure. Anybody deserves it. She does. And, certainly in some ways, you could say maybe saved my mental well-being in some ways by calling me up and giving me opportunities again. I'm very thankful for.
Well, so you're here at this convention. This is the first time I'm guessing that you've probably been to Magic at the Beach convention.
No, I think I was here like, it was more than that. It was different. back then. I think this is where I first met Luke Dancy. No, wait, that was Scam. Do we talk about that? Are they the competition?
No, Scam is gone.
About Scam?
That's gone.
Oh, so we can talk about them now. Okay. So, yeah, I think it was called Scam, but it's South Carolina still. That's I think it was actually here when they did. I don't remember.
In Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, because I was like, what was that? I was like in high school when they hired me to come out because I had to have my dad come with me.
Were you doing Doves back then?
I was. That's all I got hired for, you know, and rightfully so. I had no business doing anything else, for, you know. that's where I first met Dave and Barefoot.
Dave Tanner,
and some of these guys out here. And Luke Dancy, legend himself.
Was Luke from out here?
Yeah.
I mean, I've known Luke for a long time. I didn't know he was a Myrtle Beach guy.
Yeah, well, I don't know
if
he's
South
Myrtle
Carolina
Beach
guy
specifically, but yeah, it was somewhere out here, yeah. So, it's a cool day, so I'm happy to be back. I like Myrtle Beach. I know it kind of gets a bad rap, but it kind of reminds me of a weird cousin to, like, you know, the Dells or something like that, you know, because I grew up in Minnesota, so we had, like, the Dells. I'm from rural Minnesota, by the way. I'm from the good part, so don't judge me. And, you know, so I've been going up there. It kind of gives me that same vibe. I like it here. So when I got the opportunity to come here and Charles invited me, I said, absolutely, happy to come.
Yeah, Charles performed his show for the public the other night, and it was just a packed house and very good, a great show. I've seen the show a couple times before, and you've known Charles for a long time, I guess, as well?
Yeah, I first met him. I don't know if he, like, publicly shares this, but he was one of them weird singing robe dudes from the Caesar's Magical Empire days.
Right.
And I got hooked up, and my mom, I think it was Jason Byrne, back in the day, I was out in Vegas, and I had known Jason, long story how, through Universal Studios and nonsense, it doesn't matter, but I had hit him up, and he got us, like, hooked up with the Empire. Me and my mom went, and Charles was our, like, singer dude, and for the listeners...
At your table.
At the table, yeah. For the listeners, it was, you know, this whole thing, you can look it up, there's tons of stories about the Empire, but they had these hosts, and God bless them, because I would have been a just functioning alcoholic if I had that gig. So, like, God bless them, you know, for what they did. And it was great.
Amazing lineup. When you look back at some of the talent, you know, with Mike Amar and several
others. And even some of the guys wandering around. I'm like, Charles was one of the guys that was, you know, the singing guy. But I remember hearing, like, Chappie Brazil. was one of those guys, you know, kind of the underground legends, too, that weren't necessarily on the marquee. But there was some heavy hitters in that sort of wandering character stuff, Charles being one of them. But anyways, I got my picture with him. So there's like 12-year-old me, all gap-toothed and pimple-faced, you know, smiling like an idiot next to Charles.
Nothing pierced at that time, I guess.
Nothing visible. But, you know, knowing Charles, seeing, you know, how he's gone on to do cool things himself, and now he's landed here, and he's got a really cool theater, you know, and venue, and he's obviously been able to make it work and helping take over the convention and opening up his space and getting stuff set up here with all the organizers, too.
He's found a nice niche here.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I mean, it's a nice tourist area, and he's in the middle of it right here on the boardwalk, and it's a great tourist attraction, and families come out, and it's really Las Vegas in Myrtle Beach, you know.
Yeah, it feels cleaner, though. It feels cleaner. I mean, last time when I left Vegas, I think I stepped over a needle, and I've only stepped over, like, bird poop here, so... You know, we're trading up.
We're trading up, that's right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow perform and lecture. What are you going to be lecturing on, by the way?
I don't know.
You're just going to throw it together at last?
Yeah, I mean, no. I don't really lecture, but when I used to do a lot of kids shows, I kind of have stuff that that I came up with that I like to share. Because everybody can relate. Everybody's done shows for kids.
Dan Sperry on kids.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, that's a horrible soundbite. Let's try that again. On kids show material.
On kids show material, yeah. Finish that sentence.
Right, that's all I need is for somebody to clip that and bury
that
me. Yeah. Some weirdo.
Well, we're going to get together sometime while you're here and have a more lengthy episode, and we'll talk a lot more about the illusionist and your world travels and everything else, because you are an interesting dude, and I know a lot of people would like to know more about you, too.
Great, yeah, let's talk about other things.
We will do that. So stay tuned for a later episode. So in the meantime, that was Dan Sperry. This is Scotty out. As I just mentioned when we were talking with Dan Sperry just a moment ago, we were saying that this is the beginning of the second day, and actually right now we had an excellent lecture this morning by Paul Stone, and then going on right now is one by Carl Hine, but I thought we'd kind of go through a little bit of some of the what happened last evening with the evening show, which was great, and that was a close-up show, and so I've got somebody here with me who I run into at conventions all the time, Michael Healy. Hey there, Michael.
Hi, Scott. I don't know who's stalking who. Either you're stalking me or I'm stalking you.
We do see each other a lot at these conventions.
Right, and we have dinner at Magi Fest.
Yep, that's right.
In Columbus with Harriet.
That's right. That's always a fun time. And That is a pretty good dinner there. What is that name of that place? Ruby's. Jack Ruby's? Or
oh, you know, I don't remember. It's German, in Germantown.
Oh, that was the... okay, sorry.
It'll come. If I had a multiple choice, I could pick it out, but I can't remember.
Yeah, it's not Schultz's, but you're right. There was a German restaurant. We were sitting at the bar.
We always seem to sit at the bar because we don't want to wait an hour for a table.
That's right, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. Well, I want to go over some of the acts that we had on then last night. And the show featured Chris Blackmore, and Paul Stone actually was the host of that, Jaffo, Carl Hine, and James Brandon. And we're going to talk a little bit about each of them then right now. As I recall, that Chris Blackmore was the one who had opened the show. And do you remember some of the things that he had done?
Yeah, he's a very sharp comedy magician. He mentioned that he performed a lot at Warren and Annabelle's in Lahaina. Mm-hmm. And maybe about 10 years ago, I got to go to Lahaina and Warren and Annabelle.
I never saw that. Was that great?
It was great. It was a dinner theater. You would have dinner and then go into a theater to watch magic. Mm-hmm. And I saw Dana...
Daniels
and John Chirac, who performed here last year.
That's
and
right.
Lectured here at Magic at the Beach.
Yeah. Well, he did a... What I really liked about his presentation was just that, his comedy in his presentation. I mean, he really showed that he is a worker and knows how to handle the audience. He was doing a lot of improvisational stuff with people in the audience and everything. And the card effects and everything that he did with the ending. Was that a Bill and Lemon, or what did he end up with, a Bill and a...
it's a little bit of a blur, but I think you're right.
It was kind of a thing.
In the can of beans.
Coffee beans. That's right.
Right.
And then when he opened up, or somebody from the audience opened up the coffee beans, then they poured it out, and there was the signed $100 bill.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The Bill and Lemon was today at the competition.
That's right. There wasn't a competition. That was another thing this morning. We did have the competition. We'll get to that here eventually then as well. But, so he had, I thought, just a well-rounded routine. It was a good act. You can see why he was working there at Warren Annabelle's.
Sure.
Because I know they were very selective as to what magicians that they had there. Several people had... I guess, tried to get on as a regular, and even though they're good magicians, the fellow who owned the place, Warren, I guess, was pretty selective, and he had the top guys.
Yes, yeah, and really sad that last year Warren and Annabelle's burned down, and I spoke to him after the show last night, and unfortunately there's no plan to rebuild it, so it's really sad. And a big loss in magic. It was a great place.
It really was. And next to who we have? It was...
I don't remember...
The order?
I know Carl Hine was last.
Yeah.
It was either Jaffo or James Brandon.
James Brandon, I think, was next to last because he did a stage show.
Right.
And the rest of them were all on a table.
Right.
And they had a camera so everybody could see in the big screens.
Right. You're going to have to jog my memory.
I didn't write down things either. It's kind of like, I wish Mark D'Souza was here, so he's the one who always makes the copious notes.
Yeah, I told you I enjoyed listening to Mark because you and I were both at SAM, TAOM, Magic Texas.
Yeah.
And Mark did a really nice job.
Recapping
summarizing. He's got a great memory. But as you know, when you come, you see a lot of magic and a lot of magic performances, it's hard to recall every single thing.
You know, that's a very good point, Michael, in which a lot of times it does start to become a blur, but what you remember, the things that stand out, is something that happens to be unique.
Right.
That, for an example, I remember Michael Blumenke, who was one of the
winners. Oh, sure.
Because he had the robot arms.
Of course,
I mean,
yes.
He could have done just the cups and balls and he would have forgotten about it.
Well,
by using the robot arms and the comedy, you know, we're talking about Magic Texas now.
Right. He was wonderful, and he got the biggest ovation, and I think he's a teenager, and
he was. I think he's older now. I think he's in his 20s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't tell. And you know, when they introduce, they don't tell. Luckily, they don't tell you age.
But the other guys, who were here, they were really good. Yeah, James Brandon, I remember, had done an excellent stage show. And I say stage show, I mean he was on the stage, whereas the others again were down front and on the close-up table and everything.
And Charles Bach, who owns the theater here, he does a marvelous job with the tech. and whether you were on stage. And it was a close-up show, but I the performers adapted close-up tricks. Some of them did it more as a parlor stage trick. Yeah. And also with Charles's technology, I think everybody got to see what the performers wanted you to see.
Well, that closed out last evening, and we were out about 9 o'clock, and so the dealers were open, and the dealers are across the, like, about 20 paces or so over here at the Dave & Buster's. So you walk out the theater door, and we're actually standing outside here, and right now you can hear the music in the background here on the boardwalk. It is a tourist area, it's a tourist spot, but right now it's everyone's back in school, so it's not as busy. Plus, this is a Friday afternoon.
Right. I think the air conditioning got to my voice. I woke up this morning, and as you know, I competed this morning in the close-up competition. And
that was the first thing out of the shoot this morning was the competition. I can't believe how many people we had. We must have had 16 people there.
Sure. And there was at least one person who came like very late, who wanted to join in, and unfortunately he wasn't able to join the bill, so to speak.
Well, one thing I thought was great about the competition was how they kept it tight. You had to have 5 minutes or less, and if you went 5 minutes or over, you were disqualified.
Sure. And I couldn't see the judges. Rumor is that you were one of the judges. I'm not sure. But
I was.
Luckily, I have an Apple Watch. Yeah. That I set for 5 minutes, so when my wrist started vibrating, I knew it was time to get the hell off the stage.
Yeah, as I recall, you had done the lottery prediction numbers with a deck of 52 cards that were...
Sure.
Anyhow, very... can't tell you anything about it right now until everything is complete.
Yeah, that's fine.
But then we can discuss it later.
That's
and
fine.
I think they're going to be announcing the winners at this evening's show.
Tonight, the show, it's a comedy show tonight at 7:30. At about 7:15, they're going to announce the winners. And I think, from what I understand, there's first, second, and third place for stage magic and first, second, third place for close-up magic.
Right. And then when we go upstairs and they're going to have a happy hour, or happy couple of hours, I guess, we'll have a chance to chat with people who want to get some feedback.
Sure. Up in what they usually call the Houdini Lounge.
Right.
And this is a beautiful venue here in Myrtle Beach at Broadway at the Beach. And
we're not actually on the beach, but it's
That's what they call it. I know we're
probably a couple miles from the beach, but still, it's very nice.
But the whole tourist place here is called Broadway at the Beach.
Right. So, the next thing we had, by the way, was Paul Stone, who gave an excellent lecture. He's going to give two lectures.
Sure.
The one this morning was about Siegfried and Roy and his relationship with them and producing their show at the Palladium in London.
Right. I love Paul. I met him last year at Magic Live. I went to Las Vegas a few days early, and there was a tour, as you saw in his presentation this morning, the house,
Jungle Palace,
which is where Siegfried and Roy lived in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And Paul gave a unique tour. Mm-hmm. And as you heard, some wealthy circus owner from Europe bought the house and spent a lot of money fixing it up. So I went on the tour. Mm-hmm. of the house.
Just before Magic Live, as I recall.
Yeah, it was the day or two before.
Right, right.
The other thing they gave us last year was Penn & Teller tickets, fool us. But I enjoyed Paul and his relationship with Siegfried and Roy, and in the videos you saw this morning at his presentation, he was in touch with them and was a good friend of theirs.
Right. So that was a very good one.
Yeah.
And then right now, we just were watching some of Carl Hein. He started into some Rubik's Cube things, which you and I don't do. So I said, let's step outside and chat for a minute. But what about the rest of his lecture that he was doing? Great.
Well, the truth is, I love Rubik's Cube magic, but I've seen Carl many, many times. And unless he has something brand new relative to Rubik's Cube magic, I'm going to go back in and buy whatever he has, because I have a lot of Carl Hein's DVDs and stuff.
Yeah, he did close out last night, and he was spectacular.
Yes. In fact, today at his lecture, he taught some of his effects from last night.
One of the things that kind of fooled me, and I was not expecting, he did the Heine 500.
Right.
And then he has a kicker at the end when they change to, like, $51 yes, bills or something.
That was incredible. And
did he teach that? I missed that.
He teased it a little bit, okay. And it's on one of his DVDs.
Okay.
But, for magicians who are familiar with that trick, you're not expecting that at the end.
No,
and like you said, it was like $51 bills that came out of the five bills that he had. And, I don't know how he did it. But I'm going to get that DVD.
And he had a running gag also in which he kept having a card in his hat.
Yes.
And then he would also produce a bottle of Heinz ketchup. And he did that four times.
Yes,
ketchup,
yes. Regular... not Norm Nielsen bottle ketchup. These were real
from the grocery store plastic
big
full
bottles of ketchup.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, it was just, again, kind of a running thing that he had. So anyhow, that was overall a very good show then last night and the lectures we've had, and it has been pretty much nonstop. And the last night also we had the hoedown, had the barbecue dinner.
Yes, that was great. And the group that came and did the square dance, there was a whole square dance thing going on here last night outdoors. The weather's cooperating, and it was a lot of fun.
And because we had a lot of tourists walking by, they were kind of surrounding, saying, "What's going on over here?"
Yes,
and
yes.
They had a guy, calling square dance.
Right. A lot of fun.
Something
of
pretty
fun.
Kitschy.
Yep.
Well, Michael, thank you very much. Always good to catch up over here with you.
Scott, I'm a big fan, and keep up the good work.
Thanks very much. I appreciate the comment.
And I'll see you at the next convention.
We will.
and I am going to Italy next July.
Oh, for sure.
So
see you there.
I'll stalk you there.
Okay. All right. The Magic Word Podcast. That was Michael Healy. Scotty out. We were just talking about some of the performers who were working in last evening's show doing a close-up, and I've got with me right now one of the performers who was there. It's Chris Blackmore. Hey there, Chris.
Well, hello, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, and it was a good show last night. It was a great way of kicking that off. And I mean, it was bookend by you and Carl Hine. You know, it was just, I thought, a spectacular show last evening, so you did a great job.
Well, thank you very much. It was a fun audience. You know, we all look forward to entertaining a room full of magicians.
That's the kind of comedy. That's the kind of funny guy.
but in reality, they were wonderful. They had their spouses with them, those who are lucky enough in magic to have spouses.
Yeah.
And they were a wonderful crowd. And it was an interesting setup because we were actually in the theater seats with the close-up table right up front. So it was very intimate. But my years at Warren and Annabelle's, that was the same feeling. So it was very intimate feeling.
Which I was going to ask you about that. Were some of the routines you were doing last night in your, or was that your Warren and Annabelle act? Or is a portion of it? Or
It was a portion of it. I used to do the $100 bill in the coffee can every night there. Mm-hmm. Maui Magic Joe, Volcano Fire Roasted Coffee. So, that was a lot of fun last night. Good group.
It was a lot of fun. And you've not been to this convention, I assume, before, have you? To the Magic of the Beach? Or?
This is my third convention in my entire life.
What?
I'm sorry, my fourth convention. Cavalcade of Magic in...
St. Louis?
No. Something
Little Rock, Arkansas.
No, this is when I was a kid, when I was 16 years old.
Cavalcade
it was in Hollywood. Cavalcade of Magic, I think it was. Back in the day, I went to One Magic Live, I performed it in Abbott's, and now I'm here. So...
not a convention guy.
What
was that?
I'm busy. I work a lot. I work a lot, and I see a lot of magicians in real life, and I love conventions. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, so now that you are getting a little bit older and maybe start to slide into a little bit more of retirement and being a bit more selective, since Warren and Annabelle's is closed and so you're doing jobs that you want to take, but we start attending more conventions?
Yeah, probably will. Just keep me out of the dealer's room. I spend too much money.
I did do this year than I have anywhere else. So.
Yeah, if it looks like I can do it easily and it's a gimmicked item, I'm a sucker for it.
I'm in, huh?
Yeah.
Well, they do have a pretty good dealer's room over there. What, they have about like a dozen dealers or something?
They have a dozen dealers. They have some great antique books, too, and some posters, and just a wonderful new collection of magic over there. That hasn't been released yet.
And that's true. I bought a couple of things. I said, well, I can't really sell these things officially yet, but
yes,
I said, okay,
yes,
I like
yes.
it. And one thing I got was the hopping. It was a hopping half variation
the key?
Of the key.
Oh, did you get that? Nice. It looked very nice. It's a key, used for hopping halves. What a brilliant idea.
Basically, the shell is on the top of the key over there, because I've been doing hopping halves for so long, and I have gone through, I'm on to my third set right now, because I went into my pocket and I'm using it, and I've got a good routine that I do with it, and so I'm going to be doing a similar routine. I'm just kind of playing with a pattern in my mind, but it's just, it's my go-to thing for strolling.
Well, and so, the key is so logical, too.
That's my point, is people don't carry around half dollars or silver dollars, and certainly don't, they're not familiar with larger English pennies, which they don't even have, you know, much
good
anymore.
Very good point.
But keys are things, that's what I'm saying. You're right, it's more organic, and it's in popular zeitgeist, basically. You know.
Here, I'm going to do Dana Daniels line. Keys. Yeah. Actually, that's Luigi's line.
Keys. It's a bird. It's a bird. So you'd worked with Dana for a long time, and you were telling me a little bit earlier that Warren had said, because you and Dana had, you were so funny together, said you guys can't work together.
Yeah, he wanted a little more finger flinging in the show, and that's why he brought in John George and John Schirock, and of course they're just amazing performers, but their chops, their card handling and coin handling is through the world.
You and Dan or Dana often just traded out, so you just kind of saw each other in passing, unfortunately.
We saw each other. Well, we waved each other over the Pacific Ocean. As he'd be flying home, I'd be flying out. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. So the convention is great. Now, you're going to be doing something else? Going to be giving a lecture or performing later?
Performing later, thank goodness. I was going to lecture, and then everyone realized I have nothing to lecture about. So let's just perform and have some fun, you know. So, yeah, we're on stage. I get to host tonight, which is one of my favorite things to do, is be an MC. I love being out there.
I'm with you. I love MC.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like it. Oh. Well, you have to be there the whole show. Yeah, so what?
And you have to be present and knowing what's happening. And then sometimes you have to kill a little time. And I don't like to use that expression of killing time. I want to do something that people are going to enjoy, you know.
Right. But, and then the worst part of it, though, is when someone gives you three paragraphs and says, oh, this is my introduction. Please do it verbatim. No.
I'll get the gist of it. I don't like to read paper.
No, it's bullet points for me.
Yeah.
It has to feel. It has to. All performing has to feel like it's in the moment and right now. And
Yeah. Again, like whenever I'm talking to people for a podcast, I don't have anything in front of me about their background. It's just I'm kind of going from what I know about a person, and because we work together or know each other or whatever. And with the same thing with when I'm working with someone on stage as an MC, I like to get an idea of something about them, even if I don't know them. Sure. I know a little bit about their background, enough to get across to the audience, because we don't need to say that you've won this award and that award, or you've appeared at the castle or whatever else. I mean, it sounds great for magicians, but for the corporate audience, they don't know what the castle is or whatever.
And the other thing you have to remember as an MC is your role is there to make everybody else look great.
That's right.
Even if an act doesn't go over so well, you know, you've got to have the ability to rebound that audience from that and take them to the next level and make sure they're excited about the next entertainer. Your job is always, and it's not to compete. It's to be, you know, a ringleader, and that's kind of what you are. Big John Strong Circus taught me this back in the day. We used to do a circus go around, and he taught me how to be a ringleader and the ladies and, you know, the whole thing, gentlemen and all that. And really, that's all you're doing on stage in a reduced, you know, volume and just kind of less mannerisms. But you're the host. You're that ringleader for the show.
I think of an MC as being like a referee, basically. Ah. You want stay out of the way. You let the rest of the football players, the basketball, whatever the players play, and let them play, and you're kind of making sure that if something needs to happen because there's been an error or whatever, you're drawing attention to it, but you're not the star.
No.
You're just someone who's facilitating them to be the star.
And if you're good at it, you're remembered more than some of the acts.
That's true.
So it's really a good spot to get a lot of stage time in, too.
It's not just that. I like to do MC work for other companies, and I was doing something once in Vegas. It was for Commemorative Air Force, and there were a variety of speakers, and I was introducing each of the speakers. And some were interesting, some were entertaining, some were just complete flat boring where people were falling asleep in the audience. And they were looking forward to me, I think, being the MC because I would lighten up the group again and try to get the energy back in the room.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's the role of an MC, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I love that as well. Well, Chris, great seeing you. I hope you're enjoying your time at your fourth convention here.
Yes.
The hospitality here at Myrtle Beach has just been great as far as what I've seen. I love the people here.
They're fantastic. And I got to see Charles Bach's show the night before the convention started. If you're in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina area at all, you must come to Charles Bach Wonders. It's a wonderful theater, a wonderful showroom. And if you haven't met Charles yet, you should, because he's a wonderful human being.
If he had the show in Las Vegas, he would be killing it, because it is a Las Vegas show, and I know he is like one of the top performers around, but also he knows how to choreograph, how to put the music together and everything. He's got a background and all that. It's just great, and I highly recommend it also. You need to come see the show.
The dancing, the lighting, the choreography, he's put so much work into
this. His assistants are great.
His assistants are fantastic, with enthusiasm through the roof, If you loved Doug Henning, you are going to fall in love with Charles Bach.
He has that enthusiastic, imp-like kind of.
He has those qualities. Those qualities. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Just wonderful.
Charles has put this thing together. It's been a vision of his for a while, and so he's done a great job in bringing you and other people in here, too. So it's been a great convention. I'm looking forward to the rest of it. So
thank you so much for taking time.
Thanks a lot. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that's Chris Blackmore. Scotty out. We talked also about the contest that they had this morning, and it was a little bit different kind of a contest in which you only had about 5 minutes, and I talked about that a little bit earlier with someone as well, and I've got one of the contestants who is here with me, Michael Barefoot, right now, who has his own show actually here in Myrtle Beach as well. Hey, Michael, how are you, man?
Glad to see you again, Scott. It's always good to see
you.
You
as well. Always a pleasure. Well, since you've been having your own show here in Myrtle Beach, I don't see you at conventions like I used to. It seems like I used to see you compete all around, like the IBM and every place.
Yes, sir. Last time we checked, I have 135 first place awards. I don't count seconds. I guess right there. So, yes, sir. Yeah, it was different this morning because you're competing against close-up and stage, and a close-up person, they can get past that wall a lot faster than a stage guy can. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing. You know, some of the rules I didn't understand, because it said contest. When I see S at the end, I think you got a stage and a close-up, but they were combined. It was just different, like 13 people. It was different.
It was different, yeah, and I kind of like that a little bit, particularly because we had so many people compete, which was another unique thing, because I'm finding when I go to conventions, there are fewer and fewer competitors, and the quality is lower and lower,
sir.
And some conventions have decided we're just going to get rid of the conventions altogether because we're just not getting the quality. But here we had, 16 people or something?
I think, 13, 15, something like that. The only thing is, I think the contests are becoming more now to one-trick ponies. A guy really ain't doing a routine like they used to with different, like a middle, beginning, end. They're actually doing one routine, like Penn and Teller and those guys, and America's Got Talent.
Oh, that's a good point.
They only, that's what time. So, like, when you see me compete, you know, there, you can tell that it has a flow that goes up and down, because I have a little bit of time to do that. When they're doing a matted trick, they're doing that one trick. It's just a card trick all the way through. It's not really a coin thing to go into the cards that go into the ropes.
Right.
It's just one.
You think that's because people have shorter attention spans? It seems like we're seeing, like with TikTok and with a lot of things, that we're just doing a lot. Well, even they don't have record albums or CDs anymore. You can just buy the song that you want to hear without all the rest of that. It seems like that we want to hear sound bites. We just don't want to read the whole book. We want the cliff notes, basically.
I believe that's what the TV has done to it.
Well, it's a good point. That's where I'm getting at.
So the TV has done that. In a real person, in real life, they still want to see the whole routine because they want to have the middle, beginning, and end.
Yeah.
But they're so used to seeing it on TV, they want to get right to that candy. I call it eye candy.
Yeah.
It's like standing up doing manipulation at a close-up table.
Right.
Same thing.
Right. Are you still doing some walk around or strolling
every
at
night,
any restaurants?
Every night, yes, sir. Every night. Okay. If I'm in town, I don't have a big show. I still do Angelo's.
That's right. You wrote me about that steakhouse you were working
at. Yeah, you got to come there. 26 years. Okay. 26 years, that place.
Holy moly.
10 hours a week.
Yeah. Now, that has to be a pretty good venue for you from the standpoint of getting additional work and high-paid work, too.
Well, people say that, you know, I never use it that way, though. I don't pass out my card to everyone. Like a lot of magicians in my lecture that I give, they tell you to pass out a bunch of business cards. I don't do that. I try to do less as possible. I believe the less you work, the more money you make. It's like you doing 12 shows a year now. You're making more money now.
Okay,
than you probably did back in the day when you were working 30, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that the less you work, the more money you make. I don't use it for that, really. But Dan, when I took the Dan Orleans thing for the trade show performers, I took his advice and started giving my cards out at the bar. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to the convention center, and I was getting booked like that. just like that, because then they see you, you go to their booth, and you talk to them and give them your price.
Right.
They come back for next year. So it does really help that way, if you can see that client again. But if you're just seeing them one time a year, it's hard.
Right. Well, that's true. And do you do a lot of trade shows out here then?
I do quite a few at the convention center, yes.
I was assuming that the Myrtle Beach has a convention center.
Yeah, we have one right down the road. It's only like maybe 4 minutes.
Because since this is a big tourist spot, I'm sure...
Golf capital of the world is what they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. There are so many different golf courses here. Actually, they've overbuilt, I guess. And they had to subdivide, and they've made them into residential communities.
That's why I play putt-putt. So many golf courses. Yeah, the Chinese...
I've heard that Gilligan's Island putt-putt is supposed to be really
good. It is good. They got Tiger Woods over here. You seen that one?
No, I've not seen that
one. It's expensive. I mean, it's like $30-$40 to play putt-putt.
Wow,
right over here on the other side of Broadway.
Yeah.
So if you get time, just go look at it. The greens are big. It's pretty.
Wow. It's pretty. That sounds interesting. Now, you've been coming to this for a long time. Of course, you reside here
as
well. But I assume you go back to the Scam conventions
when
as well?
When they do have it, they don't have the Scam anymore.
I know the Scam.
Yeah, I like that place. John Tudor did a great job there. Mm-hmm. John Tudor and all his people from the ring, the Columbia ring, they all did great. I miss those guys, you know.
And so that kind of went away, and then this more or less took its place.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
What year did they start this? Because it seems like there was a hiatus for a while.
Yeah.
And then, Charles picked this up. Charles
he got Bach, it back. He picked it back up after Dave and Roman stopped doing it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think Charles got permission to use the name, and that's why it happened.
Right.
Yeah. That was a good thing that he did that, especially because he has a great theater, and
he has
a great show.
Yeah.
He has a great show. That's why you can see my show and see his show. They're totally different. You know, I try to be funny and do manipulation.
He's got a lot of song and dance.
He's a dancer, man. He can dance. He looks good.
And I like the location of this, obviously, right here on the avenue where we've got the boardwalk. It's very nice right across from Dave & Buster's.
Where
we got the dealers that are set up over inside there. And as a dealer, you were a dealer over there then, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I'm trying to get rid of some junk. Yes, sir.
There you go. So do you find that it's handy for you and good as far as...
Well, yeah, I did really, really, really great down in Daytona. They have a good convention down there, too. The Daytona Beach Magic.
Yeah, that Harry puts on.
Yeah, it's canceled this year.
It was?
Yeah, because the head guy, Dan, his wife don't feel well. She has an operation that week.
You mean Dan Stapleton?
No, Dan, the man who actually owns
Daytona Magic.
Yeah,
you mean that? Yeah, Harry. Wife, that's right. Harry sold that.
Yeah, his wife's kind of sick, and so they had an operation this week of it. Because last year I left this and went straight to the other one.
I was thinking, well, that's right, because that was in November.
I think it's like 3 weeks of difference. It's 3 or 4 weeks difference.
Yeah.
So I left there and went there.
But this was at a different time last year, I think. Yeah, because it was during bike week, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
I got my bikes at home if you go to ride them. I got four of them, so you can ride them.
So I know you're competing, and there's something that you've seen at this convention that's been outstanding or a highlight for you. I know you've kind of seen it from different sides. You've been on stage and doing the contest as well as being in the dealer's room, but you've also been sitting and watching some of the lectures and seeing the evening shows. Something that stands out to you that you like this year so far?
I love Charles with Audio 8. I've been using him, his Audio
Charles
8.
Peacock. Now we're talking about different Charles.
Different Charles, sorry, yeah. The S Corporation. That's right. He just said that. Yeah, I've been using his stuff for like 12 years now. Mm-hmm. I've always had remote stuff. I used to use IQ. Then when he came out with his Audio 8, I went to that. And he's a great guy. He was very...
Well, I used show cues for a long time. There was Carl Andrews and Sean Popp had put together. And I am a strong proponent of saying that you should add sound to your shows.
Yes, sir.
And even if you're doing a small show of only 15 people, it adds so much.
They give you respect before you start.
There you go. Exactly. But the things that they do, of course, with the Audio Ape is you have the ability to also work with your lighting and as
well. It saved me so much money. It's like when I do shows in Vegas, I'd be at Wonderground next month. I'll be there the 24th, October 24th.
I didn't know it was still in operation. So.
Yeah, I think Jeff sold it to somebody, and Jeff's going to be there that night, but I think he sold it to, I can't remember the guy, that's bad.
It's still once a month, though?
Yeah, still once a month. It's on the 3rd or 4th Thursday, so it's the 24th of October. Mm-hmm. I'll be down there. But it saves so much money by having Audio 8. I don't have to, when I go to like to the clubs down here, I don't have to pay their sound guy to sit in there and babysit
me. That's a good point.
Yeah. I save a lot of money with Audio 8.
And I like also it has a good distance that you can be pretty far away.
Yeah, it goes through walls.
It's strong.
It goes through walls, everything else. Yes, sir.
And it has what he was talking about, the hopping frequency. So this way
keeps,
you don't have to worry
it keeps
about
hitting it. Yeah, it hops around. So it sends it and sends it and sends it. And so if somebody else is on the same frequency, it'll still go through.
I've had that problem with some of my sound systems before. Mm. And when I've had a microphone and I've been, particularly during a holiday party, and I'm in a hotel where they've got 3 or 4 different banquet rooms and there are other things going on, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're a professional. You know all about that. I had that trouble a lot when I used the old airline Sampson Airline. That was the worst one for me. So now they got it where it don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, so that's good to have.
That's difficult. Well, anyhow, good talking to you, Michael.
Thank you, sir.
And congratulations on
good to see you.
You're doing your show. Continue. What number of year is this for your theater?
Sixth or seventh. I don't even remember.
And you do that one night a week over there?
Right now, it's every Thursday at 7 p.m. And if you're a magician and come into town, just tell me, and I will let you come in free. I'm that kind of guy. Your spouse has to pay, but I'll let you in free.
What is the name of the theater?
GTS. Okay. Got the shows. GTS. But if you go to my website, very easy to remember, www.123magicshow.com, it'll tell you where I'm at. And then I hook you up for free.
Easy to remember. Michael, thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
The Magic Word Podcast. That's Michael Barefoot. Scotty out. We are just taking a break from the show. We just had a lecture by Paul Stone, who was talking about who was the
Ken Brook.
Yes, yeah. As the magic dealer, and also he had a lot of good stories about him and Fred Capps and Hans Moretti and Helga. It was just a great afternoon filled with lots of stories, as only Paul could tell them, because he was intimately involved with the production of a lot of these shows. And it was really, I thought, just a fantastic lecture. And he showed a video then also of Paul Daniels doing a routine with Dame Shirley Bassey way years ago when he was on her television show, when he was kind of just getting started. Anyhow, it's a, I thought, a very good lecture. Paul Stone did a great job, I think, of that. And so now we are taking our dinner break, and I'm enjoying a bite here with my friend and yours, the author of the Semi-Automatic Card Tricks, among many others, Mr. Steve Beam. Hey there, Steve.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Long introduction there, isn't
there
it?
You go. Yeah. I think Shane Paul's not here for that one. Yeah.
I think now you're ready for dessert after all that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You already ate dinner, and you're ready for dessert.
There you go.
So this is a convention you've been coming to for a long time, and I assume you used to go to SCAM years ago.
Used to go to SCAM for 10, 15 years, however long it ran, because it was in Columbia and I lived in Columbia. Mm-hmm. And then I kept coming down from Raleigh to attend that. And they stopped doing both conventions for a while, and then they started it back up last year. And I got a call last year, and they asked if I would work it. So I came here and worked it, and I had such a good time, I came back just to attend this year.
Hang out.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so much fun last year. I mean, that really knocked it out of the park. It was the first time Charles Bach had taken that over, and they had a good lineup. And it was hard to try to put lightning in a bottle again here for this year, but I think they've done a pretty good job. I've enjoyed the lectures they've had. They've got a good lineup of people. They have a little bit fewer than 100 registrants here, which makes it nice, tight, and intimate, and I like that.
I think what's amazing about this convention is there's something, there really is, you know, they do the commercial about something for everybody, but here, it doesn't matter. If you do close-up, you've got top-of-the-line close-up guys. If you do platform, you got top-of-the-line platform guys. And, you know, they even had a couple of kid show lectures that I attended the kid show lectures, and they were good. So, and if I'm saying they're good, then you know they were good, because I'm not a kid show guy.
Well, Dave Risley was the fellow, I understand, and I didn't get to see that because I was talking with somebody else, I think, doing an episode for an upcoming podcast.
Dave is great.
I'm not a kid show, but you liked it, huh?
I've known Dave for pushing 40 years. I mean, no, in fact, I've known him for longer than that. I think he booked first time I met him, he booked me for a lecture in 1980 in Wilmington. And then again in 83, I think it was. And so North Carolina, that's where he's from. And so I've known him, you know, for 40-plus years now. Always impressed. And the first guy I saw do kid show magic that wasn't your typical, here's the square circle, now we do stratospheres, right, and now we do whatever. He was the first guy who I thought, you know, really made kid show entertaining. And I thought to myself that having seen that difference, and then later Silly Billy, you know, David Kay, the fact that I thought kids' show magic had come further, than card magic had in a shorter period of time. I mean, it had really, card magic was kind of stymied a little bit in the 80s. We were all doing moves and focusing on that, and they were doing kids' show performers, it seemed to me, were doing everything except focusing on the entertainment.
Right.
It was just pushing boxes around. And all of them, one kid show looked like another, for the most part, at least all the ones I was seeing. And then I saw Dave, and then later, you know, David and a few others, and I thought, wow, if card magic can take off and go at this speed, we'd all benefit.
Was he doing school show assemblies or something, or was it birthday parties that you're
talking about? Dave Risley.
Dave Risley now.
No, yeah. he was doing a little bit of everything because he started to do it for a living full time, and he was doing mostly daycares.
Oh. Well, and that's what I understand. He talked a lot about how that there yeah. you don't get a lot of money, but you can do a lot of them.
Yeah, and he did. I think he said I think the number was 18,000 that he did by the time he retired. Yeah, he said I'm an okay magician, but I'm a great bookkeeper. And he said, I kept track of all the shows I did, and that when I retired in 2017, yeah. I had done 18,000 shows, and I think that's the right number. And I just thought, hey, like I said, I could sit and watch him and enjoy him doing a kid's show. Yeah. And one of the things he does that he started doing 40 years ago is when he started lecturing on it, he would make sure that you had kids there in the audience of the lecture. Because without kids, you would enjoy it, but you're not going to get the laughter, you're not going to get their responses, and their responses are different than an adult response would be. So, anyway, like I said, I think he was a turning point for me in my opinion of kid show workers. And having done some myself and decided, you know, I can get combat, if I want combat pay, I'll go overseas and fight, you know?
Yeah, rather than fighting the kids. Oh,
right,
boy, I
exactly,
know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I just think Charles Dave Tanner, and I think
Chuck Peacock gave a talk about Audio Ape today, which was interesting.
Yeah, that I didn't see, but I was going to say the three of them, Jerry too, the three people who do all the work, I think, for this have just done a tremendous job.
Yeah, Jerry Thompson, Dave Tanner, and Charles Pete Bach.
Yeah,
great job.
If you like magic, you got to come here because there's something here you're going to enjoy.
Yeah. And they're going to be having, I'm sure, again then next year. I'd made some suggestions as to potential lineup. And so I just know that Charles always tries to improve and do a better job year after year. You know?
Biggest improvement this year, and you know, last year was great too, but this year they added rake seating.
Yes.
So to me, that's a huge improvement because you can see everything.
Yeah.
And
you're not on the floor looking up at the stage. Here you have rake. It's like a legitimate Las Vegas theater now.
Yeah, and he has control of the building. It's his building where he, you know, puts on shows on a regular basis. So to have that access, to have that control, and you're not at the mercy of some hotel saying, well, we need to get you guys out of here at a certain time.
Right. Yeah, and if anything, I was here the night before. You did have to kind of get out. I would watch his full evening show. And before that, actually, Charles Peacock had done his juggling routine. Mm-hmm. So he did his act. And then after people left, then Charles did his. And then later at 9 o'clock, they had the hypnotist come in.
Wow.
So he's got a pretty full thing that he has. I guess the hypnotist is a friend of his who he knew from Las Vegas, who he said, why don't you come out and try this? And he did. And he's been here for 3 years with the residents.
Oh, that's great.
So it's been working out.
Well, that's how he booked the show. Booked the convention last year. That's what Dave Tanner. I've known Dave forever, and apparently Dave recommended me to him. And I got a call and said, "Well, we're getting our friends down here to have a convention, and usually that means they don't pay you, but that was not the case here. So good for them.
Yeah,
they run it professionally. They do a great job.
They do. And that was the thing I was telling Charles before. It's hard to try to create lightning again because last year it was just a perfect storm where you had Kerry Pollack and you had Eric Buss and John Chirac and Greg Fruin and Steve Beam was there also. I'd forgotten who, but many of these guys he'd worked with either on cruise ships or worked with them at Caesar's Magic Empire in Vegas.
Yeah.
And these were all friends who liked to work together. And what I was saying is I thought the shows were great because I felt as if that each of them hadn't seen each other in a while and they were just having a great time jamming together. And also it's kind of like as I'm performing, I'm going to be performing for you because you're my friend in the audience. I want you to see what I can do. It's kind of like I'm trying to impress you and I'm still, you know, after all these years we've been apart. So I felt like that they were doing, each of the performers were performing for their buddies in the audience rather than the rest of the audience. It still gave it that intimate feel, but they really, I felt like, hit it out of the park there last year.
You also had the back and forth, the camaraderie with people you've worked with before, and you're talking trash behind the scenes and stuff like that, and it makes it more fun for the performers, and also I think the audience senses that the performers get along with each other, and they're all there having fun, and that's the name of the game. So.
And the location, I think, is fine. We've talked about this in this podcast yesterday and today as far as you just mentioned, and Steve, the theater, but also being on the boardwalk right here, you have, seems like, unlimited choices as far as whatever kind of food you want and ice cream or, you know, and games or things to play and a Ferris wheel and they got boat rides and I don't know what all. I mean, you can walk for miles around here.
And if you've got a family that's young enough, you could bring the family and drive. drop them off at the beach or drop them off wherever, because there's all kinds of things to do.
And there are plenty of hotels and everything around. I came last year early and played golf, actually, with with Roman Dupree.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, it's a great vacation spot. The only issue as far as bringing families out here is that school's already started. That's one of the reasons I think that they have it now, is because it's kind of the off-tourist season.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's probably right. So okay, you leave the kids at home, you give them a key to the house.
There you go.
You know, you map to the school, and, you know, you come on down here, have a good weekend, and then go back and...
Hope for the best.
Track them down. Well, track them down, yeah.
So where do you go from here as far as your next convention is going to be? NEMCA, we were just talking about?
Actually, my next convention is going to be next month. That's Escorial over in Spain.
That's not really a convention. That's an invitation-only thing, isn't it?
It is, but it's and it's very, very small. It's usually about 40 guys.
Oh, I didn't know it was that large.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's some years it's 30, some years
it's
40.
I thought it was 40. Only like 6 or 8 guys.
Oh, no. It's about 40
guys. It's
like
you and Gary Plants. And
No, I used to be for a while. I was for a few years, I was the only American that came, which was interesting. And my Spanish isn't great, but I work on it. But no, it's a wonderful, you know, Madrid, I think, is one of the most magic cities in the world, and it's held outside of Madrid, about 40 miles away, but you take it's a train ride, you know.
So
good,
it's not at Juan's Tamara's house. It's actually
Actually at a small hotel in El Escorial. That's the name of the town, and it's a mountain town.
El Escorial meant school.
You know, like I said, my Spanish is not that good. Escuela, I think. Is school.
Yeah.
But,
Escorial versus Escuela. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, and it's El Escorial. It's San Lorenzo El Escorial. There may be a few more words in there, too, but that's the whole name of the place. That's where we go. Take a train there. We show up on Friday, and then you have Friday evening all the way through till about Saturday morning at about 5 a.m. Then Saturday it starts Saturday evening again till Sunday morning about 5 a.m. But that's the main conference, but then everybody's getting together in Madrid before and after, and every night there's something to do magic-related. It really is. It's a blast. It's one of the coolest conventions I go to. After that, I'm alternating now between Trix and Charlotte, Scott Robinson's convention, which I love. I've been to 14 in a row. And then this year I'm doing NEMCA, which is up in New Hampshire.
Yeah, Nashua.
Yeah, and so that's... That's pretty much where I'm going to be for the rest of the year.
Going to FISM next year in Turin?
Yes, okay. I am.
Are you going to go early, stay late, or both sides? Or?
Always.
Okay.
Always. If you know, once you pay for the flight,
right?
It really is your marginal cost is the room and the food, and I'm going to pay for the food where I am anyway in the States. So,
right.
I figure, and I love Rome. I spent a week last time in Rome. Just I love archaeology, and that what better place to kind of get a sense of that than Rome. So maybe Egypt, but
I would suggest another place which will come to me in just a minute, but it's right outside of Rome, and it's a few miles away, it's called Tivoli. And Tivoli is where the Romans started working on their irrigation, or I'm going to try to say their aqueducts and things, but also about how, like, the plumbing. I mean, they're all the fountains are natural, and there are no motorized fountains that are electric.
All gravity driven.
It's all gravity driven.
Awesome.
I mean, it's an engineer's dream. I mean, it's really a something that, as an engineer or someone who would be interested in that, just to see how this whole place works.
No, I would love
it's called
to.
Tivoli. It's worth going outside of Rome to see it. Yeah,
we did Pompeii last time. Giancarlo Scalia, who lived in Naples, grew up in Naples, he met me in Rome, and I just met him literally that day, and he said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And I said, "Tomorrow I'm going to Pompeii, and it's a couple hour train ride." And thank God he went with me, because you know I speak no Italian.
Yeah.
And he pointed out the pickpockets that were on the train, that were in the train station everywhere. It was a fascinating experience. But then we went to Pompeii, climbed Vesuvius, and had a blast. So anyway, yeah, I love the side trips, and that really puts magic in the trip.
No, no pun intended. Went up to Pompeii and had a blast.
Yeah, there will. Well, I'd been buried in magic the previous days, so you can understand.
Okay,
the change.
So it all ties in.
Yeah,
exactly.
There you go.
Right.
But and you're talking about the Romans. I made a trip to Segovia in Spain, where they have a beautifully intact aqueduct that goes right through downtown, and it must be 5-6 stories tall. And you can't imagine that that was done 2,000 years ago, carrying water from, you know, miles and miles away.
Right. Centuries.
Stunning.
Centuries
yeah, ago. Stunning. I mean, I look at those things and I say, I couldn't build them today.
Yeah.
Even with all the equipment, I don't have the knowledge to build them today. And they were doing it back then with no equipment and just, well, I guess free labor.
That's true, too.
The downside of the story, yeah.
To close this out, I wanted just to talk briefly about
the
book you wrote. That's right. Yeah, that's a Steve Amos Scott Wells travelogue. So you are working on another book, which is going to be a compilation of some of your tricks that from your other hand-picked tricks, basically.
Yeah, basically two things. I started doing four-of-a-kind productions a long time ago. I'm working on two books. One book is a book that it's almost all written. It's probably not going to be released for a while, but it's all my four-of-a-kind productions from day one. Because they've been out of print for 30 and 40 years, many of them, and they're still being asked, you know, about by magicians, and in some cases being performed by magicians. So I thought, just it's more of a just I want to put them all in one place and have it available. That's one. The other thing I'm working on, which is the more the passion project, which has me working literally some 12-hour days, and that is I'm taking the principles of card magic, and I am breaking them apart. I'm cataloging them as a magician, not a mathematician, the mathematical type principles, which, you know, you guys go ahead and take a nap now while I talk about it. But it's principles like Gilbert's principle and things like that that are fascinating.
Is that what you lectured on at Tricks last year? And then you were talking about the 9 card?
Well, actually
15 card.
Actually, I did it with the 14-15 principle.
14-15, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know.
I found that fascinating, but you can go deep in the woods easily and quickly on that.
Yes, you can, and I did a whole book on that, as you remember, Smokers. Yeah. But what I'm doing is more of a, not a whole book on each thing, but I cataloged about 70-some-odd principles so far. And I have tricks that are unpublished with those, and they're not average tricks. They're really top-of-the-line tricks. And so I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to do. In one book, I'll do the principles and explain the principles, and in the other book, I'll have the original new tricks that go with those principles. So if you're interested in knowing how they're done, you can have a discussion. You can hear about the history. You can hear about, you know, who discovered the principle, but also, and here are common uses. Here are simple examples. And finally, if here are the tricks that you would go to in the other volume or in the back of the book, whichever way I do it, to actually perform tricks with this. And they're fully, you know, they're performable tricks. They're not done there.
Commercial tricks.
Yeah, they're not tricks that I took just to because I needed a trick for the principal. I have done that with one principal because I think the principal needs to be it's called the Pierce principal. I did come up with a trick for that, and I discarded about 10 tricks with it because I just, you know, I was thinking I'd just leave that principle out, and finally I came up with a trick, and I go, wait a minute, I like this, and I would do it, and it's funny, and it's humorous, so it's my thing, so it's going in there as well. So anyways, 70 different principles and the card tricks that go with them.
So we can look forward to that, like, in about 2 years?
Yeah, it won't be this year, that's for sure, and it'll either be late next year or the following year before it gets finished.
There we go. Steve, thanks very much. Always good catching up with you.
I love running into you at these things, Scott.
Fun. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Steve Beam, Scotty out.
Okay.